This is Pat Perry from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And today's stories include Car Lots Beginning to Have an Empty Feeling and Towns Businesses Struggle to Survive After Hurricanes. And we'll begin with Car Lots Beginning to Have an Empty Feeling. Over the past decade, the auto industry enjoyed a boom unlike any other in modern history. Sales of new cars and trucks rose steadily from 2009 to 2016, the longest growth streak since at least before the Great Depression. Millions of Americans traded up to bigger and more sophisticated vehicles, decked out in leather and outfitted with advanced electronics and safety features. But sales to individual buyers are now falling. Even once popular SUVs and pickup trucks are sitting on dealer lots for longer stretches. Car dealers around the country said the upgrade cycle they rode to rich profits in recent years appears to be ending and that they are seeing fewer buyers despite offering discounts and other incentives. So, dealers say they are ordering fewer vehicles from manufacturers. We are turning down cars and are being more picky on the cars we stock, said Brian Benstock, general manager of Paragon Honda in New York City. We just can't take more. We're full. A slowdown in auto sales could weigh on the U.S. economy. The auto industry is the largest manufacturing sector and makes up about 3% of gross domestic product. Automakers, parts manufacturers, and dealers directly employ more than 2 million people. Car companies spend billions of dollars every year on research and development. When he was running for president in 2016, Donald Trump promised to increase auto manufacturing jobs. If sales continue to decline, forcing automakers to reduce jobs, the industry's health could become an issue in the 2020 campaign, especially in swing states like Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Consumer purchases, which are known as retail sales, fell 3.5% in the first half of the year to their lowest six-month total since the first half of 2013, according to J.D. Power and Associates. Such sales are considered a more accurate measure of demand than total sales, which include purchases by fleet operators like car rental companies. Alex Partners, a consulting firm with a large automotive practice, estimates that sales will drop more than 2% in 2019 to 16.9 million vehicles. The firm expects the industry to sell 16.3 million vehicles next year and 15.1 million in 2021. New car sales have been slumping in many of the world's major auto markets. In China, sales were down more than 12% in the first 6 months of the year. In the United States, after many years of strong sales, many consumers are driving vehicles that don't need to be replaced. Newer cars and trucks tend to be more durable and hold up longer than cars made a decade or two earlier. At the same time, the average price of new vehicles has risen to around $35,000, while interest rates on car loans have edged higher. That means people have to spend more to buy a new car than they were a few years ago. It's a double whammy, said Mike Jackson, chairman of AutoNation, the nation's largest chain of new car dealerships. Customers are having monthly payment shock. The slump in car sales has already forced some companies to cut production and jobs. General Motors recently stopped making cars at a plant in Lordstown, Ohio. That made the Chevrolet Cruze, and it is winding down manufacturing at another factory in Detroit. Honda recently ended a shift at its plant in Marysville, Ohio, that makes its Accord sedan and other models. What is perhaps most worrying for the industry is that sales of larger vehicles, SUVs and trucks, that had more than made up for a recent collapse in purchase of sedans, are showing signs of strain. Earlier this year, Nissan eliminated a production shift at its truck plant in Mississippi. Dealers are also sitting on more inventory than they were a year ago. Ford dealers had about 10% more trucks and SUVs in stock than they had a year ago, according to data confirmed by industry sources. Chevrolet dealers had 15% more trucks in stock, and Honda dealers 26% more. Yet many manufacturers are running truck and SUV plants at full speed. GM has 5 plants running 3 shifts a day, and Ford has 4. Fiat Chrysler has 2 truck plants operating 20 hours a day, 6 days a week, close to its maximum capacity. Mark Wakefield, a managing director at Alex Partners, said automakers have organized their plants in ways that allow them to adjust production more easily than a decade ago when sales plunged and GM and Chrysler sought bankruptcy protection. Still, he said, if sales continue to be weak, other manufacturers may start to idle truck and SUV plants. First, for a week or two at a time, Wakefield said, and if inventories don't come back in line, they may say, okay, maybe we do need to take a shift out. Dealers aren't waiting. In Jackson, Michigan, 75 miles west of Detroit, Wes Lutz has cut inventory at his Chrysler Dodge Jeep dealership by more than 40%. Until the spring, he had been stocking new vehicles worth about $12 million. Now I'm at $7 million, he said. And he's ordering fewer vehicles each month because even sales of once-hot models like the Jeep Wrangler have slowed. His store is still holding 9 2018 Wranglers and has plenty of 2019 models, and 2020 versions will be arriving soon. Last year, I couldn't get enough Wranglers, Lutz said. On Tuesday, AutoNation said it has been paring inventory for the past 3 months, and now 64,000 new vehicles in stock, 9,000 fewer than a year ago. Doug Wacom, who manages 6 family-owned dealerships in Massillon, Ohio, isn't counting on sales bouncing back. He's tightening inventory and focusing more on getting customers to keep coming back, whether they are buying cars or not. We're doing free car washes, service contracts, financing, the things that keep customers connected to us, he said. After such a long period of growth in a cyclical industry, he added, we know we're headed for a recession. And next, towns' businesses struggle to survive after hurricanes. On any given day, Michael Green can be found simultaneously in 2 separate locations around downtown Fair Bluff. At 1122 Main Street, in the heart of the Columbus County town's virtually deserted commercial district, a painting of Green hangs on the wall, a wide grin visible through the windowless storefront. The painting's eyes gaze over mud-caked detritus strewn across the floor of a shop which suffered severe flooding during 2016's Hurricane Matthew and again during 2018's Hurricane Florence. The town, when I ride through it, is a place that's sad. It's like a ghost town. A lot of the businesses are not there, Green said recently from the other place where he is often found, a kiosk tucked into the front corner of the only Fairbluff gas station, just past the soft drink coolers and just before the bathrooms. There may not be a painting on the gas station wall, but since early June, a banner has declared Mike's Computers open for business. Hurricanes Matthew and Florence caused billions of dollars in damage throughout eastern North Carolina, flooding homes and businesses throughout towns like Fairbluff. Now, years after Matthew and months after Florence, many of those businesses are struggling to stay open, and it's not clear if they can surmount the dual obstacles of a dwindling population and damaged building stock. The true impact of the storms on businesses is also unclear, as neither the NC Department of Commerce nor the Federal Small Business Administration is tracking closures in hurricane-impacted counties. What Fairbluff's government is tracking, I'll bet in a roundabout manner, is population loss. Al Leonard, the town's part-time town manager, uses water and sewer consumption to estimate that the town's population has dipped from about 950 in 2010 to about 600 after Matthew and Florence. If the folks are not here, then there's no reason for a business to open here, Leonard said during a recent meeting in Fairbluff's new town hall, which was built after the former Main Street location flooded in Matthew. Understanding the potential loss of population and building it into projections is a complicated part of surviving hurricanes, said Hallie Hawkins, a strategy, growth, and sustainability counselor at the Small Business and Technology Development Center at East Carolina University. Hawkins worked with 12 counties in eastern North Carolina following Matthew and Florence, including hard-hit Craven and Jones counties. Your community, Hawkins said, might not be able to support you in the way that it used to. This is particularly true in Fairbluff. In early June, the Ply Gym plant on the town's southern end notified officials it was closing August 2nd for reasons unrelated to the floods, resulting in the loss of 58 employees. The plant has in recent years manufactured fencing and roofing products. In addition to the layoffs, the closure means Fairbluff will soon lose its largest water and sewer customer, with officials calculating they will lose about $1,200 a month in utility payments. To recoup the lost revenue, the Fairbluff Town Council voted to raise water and sewer rates from $64.45 per 2,000 gallons to $68.45. While they felt obligated to raise the rate, town officials are worried about residents in their hurricane-damaged town's ability to pay. Leonard said, I know the people here are struggling, and I know $4 doesn't seem like a lot, but when you're on a fixed income, it is a lot, and usually that income is maxed out. So I am concerned. Prior to this decade's hurricanes, Fairbluff hadn't suffered catastrophic flooding in nearly a century. According to a history of the Lumber River Basin, compiled in 1978 by a pair of St. Andrews College archaeologists, the Lumber River flood, which occurred in 1928, was the worst in the history of the town. In that same year, the first paved road in the area, Highway 76, was constructed through the town. The following century saw homes built in Fairbluff and the town's Main Street depicted as an ideal example of a southern small town. Leonard said the town was lulled into complacency. The lumber, which runs just behind Main Street, sometimes swelled beyond its banks, but it never spilled into the homes and businesses that slowly rose along Main Street. No one really knew how devastating the flooding could be here until Matthew hit, Leonard said. Green, a Fair Bluff native who opened his computer shop on Main Street in 2011, was among those who did not foresee the potential impact of a flood. We've always been near the river, but it's never flooded, at least not in my lifetime, Green said recently, referencing the period before Matthew and Florence. After Matthew, Green told the News and Observer he had lost about $50,000 worth of computers and office supplies. Then, in September 2018, came Hurricane Florence. Fair Bluff was in the midst of playing what Leonard calls the grant game, applying for different pots of money to help the financially beleaguered town make necessary repairs to infrastructure and work to bring its residents back. Matthew's floodwater spilled as much as 4 feet of water into Fair Bluff homes and businesses and lingered as much as 2 weeks, Leonard recalled. Florence's floodwaters impacted virtually the same area, standing as much as 4 inches higher, but receding much more quickly in about 8 days. Al Hammond has been Fair Bluff's mayor for about 5 years. He's tried to lead the town through the two worst disasters in his lifetime. I never thought, Hammond said, it would happen twice in 23 months. A state assessment for Hurricane Florence estimated that businesses and nonprofits statewide suffered $5.7 billion in damage, with 3,800 suffering water damage and more than 23,000 having wind damage. It's easy when walking down Fair Bluff's Main Street to feel like an interloper. There are signs of a town trying to survive. Saplings in pots, flags touting late July's annual watermelon festival. It could, however, take as much as 2 hours to see another pedestrian. And curtains in a window facing the well-manicured Fair Bluff Baptist Church are spotted with black mold spores. According to U.S. Census estimates, Fair Bluff's median household income in 2017 was $27,898, and about one in every five households were living below the poverty line. Even before the floods hit, town leaders said Fair Bluff was faltering. When Matthew's floodwaters receded, Leonard recalled building owners returned to Main Street with the hope of mucking out the stores and returning to normal operations. Upon entering the stores, though, the owners discovered that 2 weeks of water had rendered the buildings ruined beyond a point worth repairing. And then the disaster was repeated during Florence, re-emphasizing the risk anyone would take in opening a business on Main Street. Leonard said the question would be if someone wanted to open a business in Fair Bluff, a beauty salon, we had a doctor's office downtown, we had a drug store. If someone wanted to open one of those, where do they go? And there's no place for them to go. Green is one of the few people with an answer to Leonard's question, along with the U.S. Post Office and a used car dealership. When he found himself spending much of his day at the gas station, greeting people he knows as they stopped in, Green asked the owner if he could do computer work there, which soon led him to setting up the kiosk. There's not many locations in Fair Bluff to do that building-wise, Green said. The problem Green faced is not isolated to Fair Bluff or any other part of the state. Hawkins, the ECU sustainability counselor, said she is working with a business around New Bern that can't find a building with sufficient space for its operations. Businesses face a multitude of problems after storms, according to officials from ECU Small Business Center and Thread Capital, which have spent much of their time since October 2016 aiding owners during the recovery process. Preparing small businesses for disaster recovery is, officials said, one of their key missions. Ariana Billingsley, the executive director of the ECU Small Business Center, said the demands of running a small business often mean the owner ends up taking on a multitude of tasks that need to be done immediately. Frequently, that does not include writing a plan for how the operation will continue after a disaster. It gets pushed until it needs to be done, Billingsley said. And at that point, it's too late. As part of its counseling of disaster-impacted businesses, the Small Business Center has stressed the importance of having a plan, including elements like having a list of employees with contact information, keeping an invoice list that is available online, and maintaining a digital set of processes and procedures. Then there's concerns about money. After a disaster, businesses have to worry not only about recovering, but also about continuing. To that end, Thread Capital offers a pair of loans. Thread is the lending subsidiary of the NC Rural Center, a private nonprofit that works to bolster the state's rural economy. Until the end of January 2019, Thread offered a six-month no-interest loan of up to $50,000. That loan was intended to keep businesses running while they waited for Small Business Administration loans or insurance payouts. Since Hurricane Florence, the SBA has approved 799 applications totaling $57.54 million for business disaster loans in North Carolina. The agency has also lent $9.17 million to 167 North Carolina businesses to cover operating costs. After Florence, said Shannon O'Shea, a senior program manager at Thread, a third of the state was practically closed down for weeks in some places, closer to months in others. So they had no revenue coming in, but bills were still due. So you keep getting squeezed tighter and tighter and tighter. In the longer term, Thread is offering a different loan meant to help disaster-impacted businesses become more resilient. Thread is offering a 10-year loan of as much as $250,000 with interest rates of 4.99% to 9.99%. The biggest thing that we shifted our mindset on in the last year or so is the idea that this is a once-in-a-generation storm, or once every 20 years. We now assume that the next one is 2 years away, said Jonathan Brereton, Thread's executive director. If these businesses have any chance of surviving, they have to be proactively planning for that. Businesses that have taken the recovery loans, Thread officials said, have used the funds to increase or switch the insurance on their businesses to ensure they have sufficient working capital on hand to withstand a disaster, and in one instance to help pay for a building's elevation. Helping businesses that are often already struggling make a major switch can be difficult, especially because they often remain vulnerable while changes are underway. Brereton said that's a little scary because if the next storm comes and they're not prepared, there goes our money. But from a community development standpoint, which is what we're trying to do, it's pivotal that we're there to help them make those adjustments. For Green, making that adjustment has meant finding a new location for his Mike Mites computer repairs. After his shop flooded during Matthew, Green made every effort to stay in Fairbluff. And while he wondered if the town's realities would force him to leave, Green never gave up. "I just feel a different pulse," Green said, "a different heartbeat when I'm there." Green knew almost every person who stopped by the Shop and Save on a recent day, the kind of familiarity that lets Green accurately note an elderly man hadn't noticed Green's greeting because he didn't have his hearing aids in. Earlier in the day, Green had helped a nearby church repair its sound system, and that evening he would drive about 20 minutes to Chadbourne to help someone there with a computer problem. The gas station kiosk will work for now, but Green's long-term vision is a little more ambitious, especially in Fairbluff at this point in its long history. I want to eventually get a storefront. I would do it downtown if the opportunity came about. Yes, or somewhere else in Fairbluff, Green said. Hammond and Leonard recognize it is unlikely that downtown Fairbluff will ever return, so they are planning to apply for a U.S. Economic Development Administration grant that would fund a new retail space. Leonard said they are eyeing a spot that didn't flood in Florence or Matthew and would need to be annexed into Fairbluff. Should the project come to fruition, Leonard and other town officials envision 6 to 8 storefronts side by side, potentially more like a strip mall than Fairbluff's traditional downtown. But they have just started working on the grant application, which they anticipate finishing in about a month. And Fairbluff can't afford a 20% grant match on its own, so it successfully appealed to the NC General Assembly to include a $6 million appropriation for the town in the state budget, of which $1.2 million would be used for the EDA match. Those funds have not been allocated due to the Medicaid expansion-centered budget stalemate between Governor Roy Cooper and legislative Republicans. Right now, we don't have any match money, and we don't have a grant, Leonard said. All we've got is a plan. And next, U.S. and France in standoff over wine tech tariffs. France is pushing ahead with a tax on tech companies such as Google and Facebook, despite U.S. President Donald Trump's threats of retaliatory tariffs on wine. That's rattling French vintners who sold 1.6 billion euros, that's $1.78 billion worth of wine last year to U.S. consumers. But neither Trump nor French President Emmanuel Macron appears ready to back down. After Trump slammed the tax Friday, French Finance Minister Bruno Le Maire said France will implement it anyway. The 3% tax mainly concerns companies that use consumer data to sell online advertising. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.